Snap! Things are about to get crazy today! Welcome everybody to the Animation Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things animation brought to you by Filmbook. My name is Matt Brunet, but some of you may know me as Animat from my YouTube channel, Electric Dragon 505, home of web series that are all about animation, including Animation Lookback and Animat's Reviews. Now, if this is your first time here in the Animation Podcast, well, let me just tell you, you came in right on time for some real insanity. I thought it would be a long time that we would top a story like the whole Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce disaster, but somehow life finds a way and could show you that if you think that's crazy, then wait till you see this. Now, for example, in this episode in particular, we're going to be looking into what could possibly be the most controversial animation story of the year. Then afterwards, we will be talking about Coco, and already it's been getting awards. Then afterwards, we will be looking into the Big Hero 6 series and the TV movie associated with it called Baymax Returns. Then after that, we will be looking into the new director that will be working on The Croods 2. And finally, we will end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. If you want to check out some more episodes on the Animation Podcast, then all you have to do is head on down to Filmbook, which is film-book.com, by searching the Animation Podcast. You can also email us at podcast@filmbook.com with the Animation Podcast in the subject line. And for our first story that we have right over here, I might as well go off and begin with the big one, because this really is the story that just came out of left field and completely shook the entire animation community. Now, as you guys may know, recently, we have been seeing what could be an absolute nightmare for people causing sexual harassment. Because ever since they discovered that Harvey Weinstein, who was once the most powerful man in Hollywood, has been using his power to sexually harass women, his life was pretty much entirely destroyed. Like, his position in Hollywood has been stripped away from him one by one. And pretty much everybody in the industry has been rejecting him since. And now, there have been more and more people that have been discovered to actually be sexual predators in the entertainment industry. And this is coming from all different places. It's not just in movies, but also in television, like YouTube series as well. And sadly, there's also the animation industry. It is sad to report that not even in the animation world that they could avoid something that is seriously as criminal as sexual harassment and also having issues like major sexism. And apparently, this is one of them right here, and like I said before, it completely shocked people. Because Nickelodeon has actually fired the creator of The Loud House, Chris Savino, after numerous of sexual harassment claims. Now, this was immediately first reported on Cartoon Brew, where it actually stated right here, reading from my source, according to people within the studio, as many as a dozen women have come forward to accuse Savino of inappropriate behavior, ranging from unwanted sexual advances to threats of industry blacklisting after the end of a consensual relationship with co-workers. Now, at first, Viacom contacted Cartoon Brew, or a Nickelodeon spokesperson has mentioned Cartoon Brew, stating, putting up this statement, and there were plenty of other reporters, like from Variety, Deadline, they would all get that same message, saying that Viacom is committed to the safety and well-being of our employees, and to fostering a workplace free from harassment. As a matter of policy, we do not comment on specific employee matters, but we take all allegations of this nature very seriously, investigate them thoroughly, and take any necessary actions as a result. Now, it only started out as this one Cartoon Brew article, and people had their suspicions. You know, they're not sure if this is actually true. But as time would pass, like the days after this report was actually released, there have been more and more women that actually came out and revealed that, yes, he is actually a sexual harasser. One of these is actually Anne Walker Ferrell, who is a director at BoJack Horseman. For BoJack Horseman, I mean. But she went onto Twitter and she revealed her story about how Chris Savino would be sexually harassing her. And then Cartoon Brew would later pick up another story from an anonymous artist who decided to share her story with her relationship with Chris Savino. And let me read that to you right over here. It actually stated, "This took place about 4 years ago. Chris Savino was working with a development program at Nickelodeon. A woman close to me had had a project that was being developed under his supervision. He got her personal contact information under the guise of helping her develop the project off hours. He presented himself as a mentor. He then proceeded to send her unwanted text messages that were lewd and sexual in nature on more than one occasion. When she turned down his advances, her development project was let go. He is a classic case of a predatory male using his status of power over a female subordinate. As with most victims, she was worried of how speaking out against him would affect her career, and no action was ever taken." And there have been many more stories. In fact, it could be possible that more than a dozen women actually did come out and reveal their story about how Chris Savino would take advantage of them sexually. Now, I just want to mention right now, though, that this is actually not the first time, and it's highly doubtful if this will even be the last time that there is a major case of sexual harassment in the animation industry. The most recent example that I could think of was back a few years ago with the Cartoon Network series Clarence. You may recall the creator Skylar Page. He was a massive sexual predator, like really twisted in the head. Like, he is pretty much the kind of person that no woman should ever be allowed to be alone in the room with him, because bad things are gonna happen no matter what. Like, he is legit the kind of guy that's not allowed to be alone in a room with a woman. Which is pretty much also why Mike Pence kind of put that rule onto himself, just in case. Okay, but all political zingers aside, what ended up happening was that after one of the sexual harassments occurred with Skylar Page, he literally went completely insane to the point that he had to be hospitalized. And later it was revealed that he had severe bipolar disorder, which either way is not an excuse to treat women in that manner. So what ended up happening was that Cartoon Network would immediately fire Skylar Page, and the showrunner would then be replaced by Spencer Rothbell, I believe. And also, not only that, but Rothbell also replaced Page as the voice of Clarence. And interestingly enough, now that Chris Savino is officially fired from Nickelodeon, Nick actually got a little bit more revealing. Like, they actually stepped up a little bit more to reveal that, yes, it is Chris Savino that's been causing this problems. And they actually released a statement by saying that Chris Savino is no longer working with Nickelodeon. "We take allegations of misconduct very seriously, and we are committed to fostering a safe and professional workplace environment that is free from harassment or other kinds of inappropriate conduct. The Loud House, which is currently in its second season, will continue to air on Nickelodeon and be in production. Season 3 is scheduled to premiere early in 2018. And by the way, this is a quote that I read on another source, this time being in Deadline. So that's pretty much the entire story, that Chris Savino has officially been revealed to be a massive sexual predator. And this has actually been going on for decades. This is not like Skylar Page, where you only had a few incidents happen on Cartoon Network. This has spanned throughout his entire career in animation, both on Cartoon Network and on Nickelodeon. So that's pretty much the whole big story, and as you could tell, there have been major consequences that have been taken. Now, I do want to say that at first, when I first saw this Cartoon Brew article discussing about Chris Savino causing sexual harassment numerous of times before, I felt a little bit of doubt because, like I said before, this was an article that just came right out of nowhere, and it was only Cartoon Brew reporting this, so of course there would be a lot of suspicions. Now, I wanted to check a little bit more info, and after I had a chat with a friend of mine named Ryan, he actually did reveal to me, and he was probably the first one to really convince me that yes, he actually is a massive sexual predator. And I think before even Cartoon Brew picked up the different stories, like, he was the first one to actually tell me that this has been going on for decades throughout his career with numerous of women. And he actually then pointed out to me to a Twitter page from at Jerispat. And let me tell you, Jerispat right over here, he is one hell of a trooper. Like, he really is one heck of a Robert Mueller. In fact, he actually might have done a better job trying to go and cover some evidence to show that Chris Savino is actually a sexual predator and has been saving a lot of different articles and social media pages all around social media, revealing all different stories from women in animation, truly revealing that yes, he actually is a sexual predator, and this has been going on. And in fact, this has actually been revealed even before this news actually broke out, that women are trying to give out warning signs that Chris Savino is actually a terrible person. So after all that, I started to believe more and more that this is actually legitimate and that Chris Savino actually is a terrible person that would be capable of doing that to women. And it's honestly really shocking, I gotta say. I mean, even though, yes, like at this point, after the numerous of stories that we've heard ever since Harvey Weinstein, like it's almost repeating itself, but the fact that this is also legitimately going on in the animation industry, where it's not just happening like one little instance like with Skylar Page, but it's been going on for a long time and some people would end up getting away with it, it's honestly really shocking. So this really did convince me that yes, Chris Savino would actually do this. But I will say though, there is one thing that I am debating a little bit, because if there could be one thing that is more crazy than this story right over here with Chris Savino, I think it's honestly the people's reaction to this story. That could debatably be even more insane than the story itself. So I decided I want to go and do my own research and dig a little deeper. So what I did is that I went onto social media and created a poll on Twitter and pretty much go ahead and ask a straightforward question saying, do you think the Loud House creator Chris Savino sexually harassed these women throughout his career in animation? And I only put up two options. It's either yes or it's either no. So I just put it up right over there, and honestly, the result that I've got, it is insane. It really is. Like, honestly, I wouldn't expect to be really, really close. Now, of course, I did receive a lot of people that would reply saying that they don't know. But those that did answer, man, we got some real interesting statistics. So out of a total of almost 500 people who voted on my Twitter poll, which specifically is 478 people in a span of 24 hours And by the way, I recently have done this. It is a total of 56 people that said yes. 56% of people said that they do believe that Chris Savino is a sexual harasser, while 44% said no. And like I said, I actually just recently created this poll. This is like a few days after the evidence are starting to come up. This is a few days after women are starting to speak up about their experience with Chris Savino. And that's what ended up happening. Like, for a while with this poll, it is insane how close it is that it would always be split down the middle, like almost 50-50. Sometimes it's a little bit yes, sometimes it's a little bit more no. But ultimately, I guess it's just there's a little bit more yes than there is no. Like, this is, wow, honestly. So basically, this is more of a 12% difference. Well, technically, like, six, like, technically you could say, this is, well, technically I say 12%, but, technically it would be 6% more on yes, but still, this is ridiculously close to 50-50, and that's why I say that it is pretty insane looking into people's reaction to this story, because even right now, even as you're listening to this, there are still a lot of people out there that would legitimately deny this story, that they would not believe that Chris Savino would actually do such a thing. And not only that, that they would even come to the defense of Chris Savino and try to help him by saying that this is all fake news, this is all a major conspiracy or whatever. Like, they would actually go and really get out of their way to go and defend Chris Savino and say that he is not a sexual harasser. Now, they would bring out so many different excuses in this case. They could say things like, well, Nickelodeon didn't necessarily confirm that he's a sexual harasser. There's not enough information, or there's not enough evidence that really did proving so. Or Cartoon Brew is not necessarily such a reliable source. They can have a pretty bad reputation. And they would go into all different sources, or they would even mention, like, they're not hearing Chris Savino's side of the story. And they would bring all that up. But honestly, listening to those excuses, like, there's a lot of holes in them. Like, I will admit that technically, yes, it is true that Cartoon Brew does have a pretty bad reputation, and that Amit Amiti is a really controversial figure in the animation industry, and yeah, more often than not, he could be a pretty crappy journalist. And even with this article right over here, it really does feel like Cartoon Brew just really jumped the gun, and it's almost like they made things worse than Nickelodeon than it should. Like, Nickelodeon could have, like, easily controlled this situation and handled it well, but Cartoon Brew just had to immediately respond quickly, all because they want to be the first to report it. Like, Amit Amiti has a little bit of that same mentality as those annoying YouTube commenters that when they would see a video immediately pop up, they would go straight down to the comments and go, "First! I'm first! I'm the first one to write a comment on this! I'm first! Give me a trophy!" You know, that kind of mentality. Like, you could tell that with Cartoon Brew, they just want to report it first because they want to have the credentials to say, oh, we're the first ones to do it. But here's the problem, though. As bad of a reputation as Cartoon Brew can have, there's never been a moment that they would report fake news. Like, I don't really recall a time that Cartoon Brew would completely invent a story. Like, they would just entirely make some stuff up. So, when you would see Cartoon Brew make a report that Nickelodeon would fire Chris Savino for sexual harassment allegations, then there must be some truth to it. But I know for a fact that no matter what excuse that those defenders would make, there is only one that I could think of onto what motivates them to go and defend it, to make them not believe that this story could be legitimate. And that is the fact that they are Loud House fans. They are incapable of separating the art from the artist. And they don't want to believe in the fact that the show that they loved, the show that made them fall in love with Nickelodeon again, was actually done by a horrible human being who actually turns out to be a sexual predator. They don't want to believe that because their blind love for the Loud House is just way too strong. And I can guarantee you that through my experience, 99% of the time, people who would defend Chris Savino for his actions, it's mainly because they are huge Loud House fans. Like, you go on their social media and they would be talking about specific episodes, or on their profile picture, they would have a character from the Loud House. That's basically the big explanation to why they would want to defend it. And I know it's because of their Loud House love, mainly because if Chris Savino would be working on a show that people actually hate, something that the general public didn't necessarily enjoy as much as something like the Loud House, like, if Chris Savino would be a worker on a show like Teen Titans Go, or the Powerpuff Girls remake, or the Cloudy with a Chance of Meatball series, or Big Mouth, then people would eat that story up, and they wouldn't need any more evidence to fully believe that Chris Savino would do such a thing. Like, they would immediately accept it. In fact, actually, I don't have to make any rhetorical examples, because there is actually a legitimate example that I could actually present to you. I have legitimately seen more people believing that one of the writers of the Powerpuff Girls remake is a pedophile just because there is one character that looks like him who has a crush on Blossom, more so than people believing that Chris Savino is a sexual predator, with actual evidence and testimonials from victims presented in front of them. It's honestly really insane. And there's no major science to it. It's because they love one show over another. When it's a show that they would perceive that it's bad, then they would assume the worst out of it, and all the people associated with that show is terrible. While if it's a good show, then they assume the best of it, and they would assume that everybody working on that show is actually good people. So that's the thing. In a way, yes, it's because of their bias towards the show that they would be willing to go and defend the creator of The Loud House. Now, I just want to say, though, if those people want to prove me wrong that this is not the case, that there is a little bit more to why they want to go and defend Chris Savino, then I actually have a little bit of a homework for you. All right, so take the defenses that you have for Chris Savino, and I want you to go and use them to defend people like Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby. Because as far as I'm concerned with those three people, they're pretty much in the exact same position. They're all accused for the similar case. And on top of that, the same amount of evidence is pretty much being presented to point out that this is actually true. That way, you can actually go and prove to me that you are someone who believes in innocence until proven guilty, and that you're not just a hypocritical Loud House fanboy. Just do that, and maybe you can prove me wrong about you on why would you even be willing to defend someone who has been accused of sexual harassment. But I will say, though, that there could be one good thing that could actually come out of this entire controversy with Chris Savino and his sexual harassment over at Nickelodeon and then him getting fired because of it. I could see that in the long run, it could actually be really beneficial that they could take this as a major lesson in order to make the animation industry a safer workplace for artists and animators, that they could be rest assured that there would be a lot less sexual harassment, that sexism would not be tolerated whatsoever, so that everyone can basically be treated equally and fully with respect. So that could be the best thing that could come out of this, is that they would take this as an entire lesson that sexual harassment, no matter what, should not be tolerated, and people with power should not take advantage of that, because that's basically the law of life. If you disrespect women, or if you disrespect other people with sexism or with sexual harassment, there will be consequences, just like with what happened with Chris Savino. Now, there is also one big question that people do have with it right now, and this is a question especially asked by all the Loud House fans. They're wondering that now that they have kicked out Chris Savino, what's going to happen with the show? What's going to happen with the fate of its future? And what's going to be happening with the movie that's going to be coming out sometime in 2020? Well, honestly, for that, I feel like it shouldn't be that bad, because, again, just take a look at Clarence, for example. After Skylar Page was fired, they didn't necessarily cancel Clarence immediately. They left the series to go on for a couple more seasons, and then that's it. And honestly, that's what I can imagine with what's going to be happening with The Loud House. It's going to highly depend on who's going to be the next showrunner, and if they can still keep that same enthusiasm as they did in the first two seasons, if they can continue that. What I can imagine what could most likely be the case is that Nickelodeon will let The Loud House run for two or three more seasons, have the show be on, have the movie be on as the grand finale, and then that's pretty much it. That's my prediction on what's going to happen with The Loud House, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see, and we'll have to see if the next person to replace Chris Savino can actually do a good job maintaining the success of The Loud House. For that, it's just something we'll have to see what will happen. But yeah, this is honestly one hell of a story right over here. And like I said before, I thought like there could be nothing that could really top the Rick and Morty Szechuan sauce controversy for a while. But then this came up and it really blew out of proportions. So yeah, honestly, for me right now, I honestly feel like there could be a chance that Chris Savino is innocent, but with all the evidence that we have seen and all the testimonials from the victims in the animation industry, I could be leaning towards yes. Chris Savino is a sexual predator, and justice has been served. Now, for our next story right over here, we're going to be looking at Coco, the upcoming original Disney and Pixar animated feature that's going to be coming out in American Thanksgiving that will be all about Dia de los Muertos. Now, surprisingly enough, even though it hasn't been released yet, and as I'm recording this, we're about more than a month away until its release, it's already getting pretty big in award shows, especially with the first one. The Hollywood Film Award has already announced who is going to be the recipient for the Hollywood Animation Award and the Hollywood Breakthrough Ensemble Award. The Hollywood Animation Award will be given to Disney and Pixar's Coco, while the Hollywood Breakthrough Ensemble Award is going to be given to Netflix's Mudbound. Reading my source here on HollywoodAward.com, it says that Dick Clark Productions announced today that the Disney and Pixar film Coco, directed by Lee Unkrich, co-directed by Adrian Molina and starring Anthony Gonzalez, Gael Garcia Bernal, and Benjamin Bratt, will receive the Hollywood Animation Award. While Dee Rees directed Netflix film Mudbound, starring Carey Mulligan, Garrett Heldon, Mary J. Blige, Jason Mitchell, Jason Clark, Rob Morgan, and Jonathan Barks, will receive the prestigious Hollywood Breakthrough Ensemble Award at the 21st Annual Hollywood Film Award. Now, they did not necessarily announce any of the other recipients. Like, they didn't announce the other categories, like who's going to get, like, cinematography, visual effects, editing, production design, makeup and hairstyle, and all that stuff. But they did immediately reveal that Coco and Mudbound are going to be getting those two awards. And the reaction to it is honestly a little bit controversial. Stating that there are some people that are excited that Coco has already been getting some awards so far, while some people are kind of pissed considering that Coco has not even been released yet. In fact, it hasn't even had its premiere yet. Even as I'm recording this, they're only a few days away from premiering it in Mexico. And already, what should be the first thing to start off the award season, already they're just giving it to Pixar. And to just give the award to Coco just because it's Disney and Pixar. Now, for me, when I look at this news, there is an optimistic and there is a pessimistic way into looking at this with the fact that Coco has gotten the Hollywood Animation Award. Now, there is the pessimistic way that shows that award shows are just getting more and more lazy when it comes to giving awards to animated features. Like, they're not necessarily putting in the effort to watching them anymore, and they're just gonna go and give the one, they're just gonna give it to the ones that have the Disney or Pixar banner and just immediately give it to Coco. Which is certainly a problem and should be explored upon, and the animation industry should certainly speak out about the unfair treatment that they're getting, just blindly giving it to Disney and Pixar because they're Disney and Pixar, and they're and now it's just become a force of habit to give them the awards. But then there is also the optimistic way, and that could be the one that I want to feel, because this is already a sign right over here that Coco is gonna be really awesome. Now, the Hollywood Film Award, just to let you know that when it came to the Hollywood Film Award, it's stated right over here. For those of you who don't know, it's stated that the Hollywood Film Award, founded in 1997, were created to celebrate Hollywood and launch the award season. The recipients of the awards are selected by an advisory team for their body of work or a film that is to be released during the calendar year. And with that said, they have given it to some legitimate animated features that do deserve an award. Like previously, they have given it to films such as How to Train Your Dragon 2. They've given it to Inside Out. They even have given it to Rise of the Guardians. So with that said, and plus the fact that even though it didn't have its premiere, the public didn't see it, they have certainly have given screenings to some people out there. Like, there have been reports that some people have already seen Coco and they're already giving it praise. So this could be a major sign that we could have a brand new Pixar classic right over here, that we're gonna, like, we're pretty much gonna have like a new amazing Pixar movie since Inside Out. So this could actually be a great sign right over there that there could be some great things to come from Pixar, and that Coco could actually be worth it instead of people assuming that, oh, it's just a Book of Life ripoff. You know, I just feel a little bit more optimistic that this could be a sure sign that we're into something really good. So who knows how it's going to go, but yeah, basically, like I said, this could go in either one of two directions, and I know technically this story is a little bit short, but that's all that there really is to report, is that Coco is already winning awards. And there are one of two ways that it can go, but for now, I want to stay in the optimistic side to see that this could actually turn out to be quite an amazing film if it's already gathering awards, because if it won an award, then there must be a reason. Okay, so for our next story right over here, we're going to be sticking with Disney, but we're going to go on to television with one of their upcoming animated series, Big Hero 6, The Series. And they have already announced how they're going to go and really launch this show off. Now, reading my source here on Deadline, it has stated that Disney XD said today that it will launch its Big Hero 6 The Series on November 20th with a one-hour primetime movie that will air simultaneously on Disney XD and Disney Channel. The movie, called Baymax Returns, will kick off a slew of shorts and previews ahead of the series' regular bow in early 2018. Now, the way that it works, going down into my source, immediately after the movie, Disney will debut two special full-length preview episodes of Big Hero 6 The Series exclusively on the Disney Now app and the Disney XD Video On Demand. Beginning November 24th, series shorts will roll out every Friday for 6 consecutive weeks on Disney XD, the Disney Now app, and the Disney XD YouTube channel. The TV movie series and shorts will roll out through 2018 on Disney XD channels and Disney channels worldwide. So that's basically the big strategy. They're going to start out by releasing some animated shorts, and they will put up a one-hour TV movie special that will go and immediately start the series, which is coming out in 2018. Now, looking through all this, I feel like, I feel like with Disney's Television Animation Group, they now have a new strategy on how they're going to start off their brand new series, or at least when it comes to Disney's TV shows. Like, I'm starting to notice a little bit of a pattern, because this is a little bit similar to what they did with DuckTales, where they immediately begin, or like not just DuckTales actually, but it's also with the Tangled series, where they would start things off with a TV movie that's meant to be the first full-length episode. They would put it up on Disney Channel or Disney XD, and then sometime afterwards, they would actually go and release the entire series. And on top of that, they would even release some shorts to go and hype things up for it with a little bit of animated shorts, you know what I mean? And it's not just that, but they would even do it with some other shows that would air on Disney Channel that are not necessarily directly from Disney. Like, I think when it comes to the Hotel Transylvania series, I think they did something a little bit similar, where Disney Channel would start things off by presenting some animated shorts that would be like the prequel to the series, and then they would officially launch the series, where we would see a little bit of Mavis and Dracula interacting with each other, and then Dracula would have to leave and not appear in the series because I guess Sony Animation and Nelvana couldn't afford to have Adam Sandler be consecutively in the show. Okay, but getting back into Big Hero 6, I mean, this is exactly what I'm expecting, like how they did it last time. This is pretty much, you know, this is exactly like what they just did with the Tangled series, where the TV movie is going to be the immediate bridge between the movie and the TV show, where we will see the new revived Baymax after he finally comes back at the end of the movie, where we see Hero and Baymax giving each other a hug, and then like they go off on an adventure or something. So we're pretty much seeing a little bit of that continuation right over there to see, to see like the new adventures that the team would have to get into. So that's pretty much what I'm expecting. But yeah, like I can see where they're going with it. And who knows, it could actually turn out to be pretty good. I mean, the showrunners, or the executive producers in this case, is actually the creators of Kim Possible, another legitimately good Disney TV show. I remember watching it as a kid, and it can be a lot of fun. Like, they got Mike McCorkle, Bob Scully, and Nick Filippi that are in charge of this TV show. So this could actually turn out to be pretty, it could turn out to be pretty good, but honestly, we'll just have to wait and see. It could turn out, it could honestly turn out into something great like DuckTales, or it could turn out into something that could end up being okay, like the Tangled series. But we'll just have to wait and see. When Baymax Returns will be premiering on November 20th, while the TV show will air in early 2018. Now, with our next story right over here, we're going to be talking about The Croods 2. Yes, the movie that we thought was dead, but somehow came back to life, and now is getting a release date of 2020. Now, the one thing that was not confirmed is actually regarding who's actually going to be the director. And in this case, we actually did find someone who will be taking charge of The Croods 2. No, it's not Kirk D'Amico, because he's still stuck at Sony working on Vivo. It's actually a new guy. Reading my source here on The Hollywood Reporter, Joel Crawford, who most recently served as the head of story on Trolls, will make his feature directorial debut on DreamWorks Animation's The Croods 2, which is set for release on September 18th, 2020. Additionally, Mark Swift, who most recently produced DreamWorks Animation's Captain Underpants, the first epic movie, is in line to produce. And on top of that, just to give you a little bit more context on Joel Crawford, not only was he recently the head of story on The Trolls, but on Trolls, yes, he also was a storyboard artist for a long time at DreamWorks Animation. Many of his credits also include the Kung Fu Panda movies, B-Movie, and even Rise of the Guardians. Now, allow me to go and read a source here from Chris DeFaria, president of DreamWorks Animation Film Group. As Chris stated, Joel has done masterful work in his career and has proven himself to be an artist with a keen eye for character and story. His wonderful work at the helm of the DreamWorks Trolls Holiday as director demonstrates his ability to expand his talents, and we think he's the perfect choice to bring the Croods family back to life for audiences across the globe. Now, when I read that quote from DeFaria, I only had one big question in mind. What the fridge is Trolls Holiday? I have never heard of that before. So I dug up a little bit more research, and this is actually something that has just been announced. Like, somewhere around the exact same time as Joel Crawford being the director of The Croods 2. Now, if I may switch up to my source onto Billboard, it actually said that apparently Trolls Holiday is actually what it sounds like. It is a holiday TV special that will be airing the day after American Thanksgiving on ABC. And the story of that special is that the trolls, specifically Poppy and Branch, want to go and give the Bergens a special holiday just to make them feel a little bit more happy. And plus the fact the Bergens never really had an actual holiday to celebrate. In a way, it sounds a little bit like the plot of Olaf's Frozen Adventure. And also, on top of that, it is confirmed that Anna Kendrick and Justin Timberlake will be reprising their roles as Poppy and Branch. So apparently, because of his directing work on Trolls Holiday, apparently DreamWorks saw that and they were so amazed with it that they decided to take Joel and to immediately make him the director of the Croods 2. Now, I completely understand the transition that DreamWorks went into this. And, you know, I'm certainly happy for Joel that, you know, he really did climb up the ranks from being a storyboard artist all the way up to officially directing his own feature film. You know, that's fantastic for him. But honestly, with this news right over here, I don't know how The Croods 2 is going to turn out. But I guess in a way, I do understand a little bit how there are some similarities between Trolls and The Croods, that they would take someone that really did have a heavy hand on working on the Trolls and just put them onto The Croods 2. Because in a way, like, they both are DreamWorks films that are catered a little bit more exclusively for kids, where they mostly try to please them, rather it be with The Croods' juvenile humor or with Trolls that they want to try to be a little bit more modern, where they would scream things like YOLO and they would put up like all these different pop songs and make the soundtrack completely EDM, you know? Like, honestly, I could see that transition. Now, rather if it's going to make The Croods great, that I'm not 100% sure. I'm not saying that it's going to suck, but for me, as someone who's not necessarily that big of a fan or is not necessarily all that impressed with the first Croods, I don't know if it's something that I would be that much excited for. And on top of that, I don't know if I could really be that excited for Trolls Holiday because I'm not necessarily that big on DreamWorks' holiday specials. Like, I have seen the ones that they have done for, like, Shrek and Madagascar, and yeah, it is a little bit underwhelming compared to the movies that they're based on. Now, technically, yes, I know that maybe Kung Fu Panda and also How to Train Your Dragon also would have Christmas specials, but I think with those ones, they would be more associated with the TV shows than the actual movies, where they would also share the animation quality of the films and also feature the all-star cast in there, like bringing in Justin Timberlake and Anna Kendrick to return for the special. I honestly don't know. Like, for now, I'm just putting in my doubts. I don't know if I'm really that interested in watching Trolls Holidays. And I'm not going to put up any high expectations for The Croods 2. I'm not going to expect it to suck, of course, because one great thing I could say about The Croods is that it can have some really beautiful animation. It's just, I don't know if it's going to be that great of a movie, but still, either way, I do wish Joel Crawford the best, and maybe he could bring something a little bit more on the plate than what the first Croods has done. And if you guys actually are excited to see either Trolls Holiday or The Croods 2, Trolls Holiday will be airing on November 24th on NBC, while The Croods 2 will be airing on September 18th, 2020. And now it is time to end things off with Animat's Pick of the Week. And for this week, I decided I want to go with a story that does connect a little bit to the first story I've reported in this episode regarding Chris Savino being fired from Nickelodeon due to sexual harassment allegations. Now, like I said before, one of the best things to ever come out of this story is that this could bring up a bright future for the people in the animation industry, where it would show that sexism and sexual harassment would not be tolerated. And also, it has been given women and non-conforming people in the animation industry to have a bigger voice, to finally speak out that these things will not be tolerated. In fact, there are plenty of women in the animation industry that they decided to go and sign an open letter to the entire animation community. And among these 217 women, these are from people all around the animation industry. These are artists and animators who would work on Cartoon Network, Nickelodeon, Disney, Sony Animation, DreamWorks Animation, Illumination, Warner Brothers, and so much more. Like, all these women and non-conforming people, they all came together and they decided to sign an open letter to the animation community, in which I shall read it to you here. So, allow me to go and prepare myself to read this, because it can be quite a big letter, so... Okay. We, the women and gender non-conforming people of the animation community, would like to address and highlight the pervasive problem of sexism and sexual harassment in our business. We write this letter with the hope that change is possible, and ask that you listen to our stories and then make every effort to bring a real and lasting change to the culture of animation studios. In the wake of the Harvey Weinstein scandal, many of the women who work in animation have begun discussing more openly issues that we have dealt with quietly throughout our careers. As we came together to share our stories of sexism, sexual harassment, and in some cases sexual assault, we were struck by the pervasiveness of the problem. Every one of us has a story to share. From tossed off comments about our body parts that we framed as jokes to women being cornered in dark rooms by male colleagues to criminal assault. Our businesses have always been male dominated. Women make up only 23% of union employees. So it's no surprise that problems with sexism and sexual harassment exist. Sexual harassment and assault are widespread issues that primarily affect women, with women of color, members of the LGBTQ+ community, and other marginalized groups affected at an even greater rate. As more women have entered the animation workforce, it seems that some men had not embraced just this change. They still frequently make crass sexual remarks that make it clear women are not welcome on their crews. Some have pressed colleagues for romantic or sexual relationships, despite our clear disinterest. And some have seen the entrance of more women into the industry as an opportunity to exploit and victimize younger workers on their crews who are looking for mentorship. In addition, when sexual predators are caught at one workplace, they seem to easily find a job at another studio, sometimes even following their victims from job to job. We are tired of relying on whisper networks to know who isn't safe to meet with alone. We want our supervisors to protect us from harassment and assault. The abuse has got to stop. The signatories of this letter demand that you take sexual harassment seriously. We ask that 1. Every studio puts in place clear and enforceable sexual harassment policies and takes every report seriously. It must be clear to studio leadership, including producers, that no matter who that abuser is, they must investigate every report or face consequences themselves. 2. The Animation Guild add language in our constitution that states that it can be censor, fine, suspend, or expel any members of the guild who shall, in the opinion of the executive board, be found guilty of any act, omission, or conduct which is prejudicial to the welfare of the guild. To craft and support the new language, we ask that anti-harassment and discrimination committee be created to help educate and prevent future occurrences. And 3, our male colleagues start speaking up and standing up for us. When their co-workers make sexist remarks or when they see sexual harassment happening, we expect them to say something. Stop making excuses for bad behavior in your friends and coworkers, and tell them what they are doing is wrong. It has not been easy for us to share our stories with each other. Many of us were afraid because our victimizers are powerful or well-liked. Others were worried that if they came forward, it would affect their careers. Some of us have come forward in the past, only to have our concerns brushed aside, or for our supervisors to tell them, "Oh, well, he's just from a different era, you know?" All of us are saddened and disheartened to hear how widespread the problem of sexual harassment still is in the animation industry, and how many of our friends have been suffering in secret. It is with this in mind that we resolve to do everything we can to prevent anyone else from being victimized. We are united in our mission to wipe out sexual harassment in the animation industry, and we will no longer be silent. Signed, the 217 women and non-conforming people of the animation industry. And holy crap, what a beautiful letter this is. And this is exactly what I'm talking about, that this could be a better and brighter future for people in the animation industry. That hopefully this would mean that action is going to be taken. That now that Harvey Weinstein has been destroyed, it will finally give these women and non-conforming people a voice to say that this kind of sexual harassment or sexism of any kind will not be tolerated, period, in the animation industry. And they're already taking a good step forward by getting rid of Chris Savino, whom for decades has been causing so much sexual harassment and threatening women to blackmail them after a failed relationship. You know, this is great. This is honestly fantastic. And I really do hope that with this letter signed by so many artists and animators, that maybe animation studios will actually listen and they will actually go and enforce some sexual harassment laws within their own studio. And it's not just that, maybe it can also work within the entire animation community, because the entire entertainment industry as well, that this will not be tolerated, period. So really, this really does show that there is a light at the end of the tunnel, and that it is over for any misogynists that want to go out and think that it's okay to be catcalling them, or they're just looking for women just for their tits and ass, you know? Finally, this is about time that we see people that are gonna be treated like people. And that's the beautiful thing. So honestly, this is the one big thing that we could take from all this. That we can look at the end of the day, that we can look after all this madness, that it could lead to a better and brighter future, that within the animation community, it's going to be a safer industry. That for people who dream of the day, and for women and non-conforming people, if they wish to go into the animation industry, they could do so with even more confidence, and that they will feel more safe, that they could do what they love, surrounded by people who share the same passion, and that they would go and treat each other respectfully and equally. Here's hoping for a better and brighter future in the animation industry. And that is all that I've got for this week. So thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Animation Podcast. You can go ahead and find more of my work at film-book.com. All you have to do is search for Metzer Brunet or the Animation Podcast. You can find me on Twitter also at animat505. Now, if you have listened to this podcast on iTunes or any other podcast service, go ahead and rate and review this episode. You know, that would just be awesome. And if you are listening to this podcast on YouTube, then go ahead and hit that like button in our video and leave us a comment on your thoughts about the news this week. Tune in next week for the latest episode of the Animation Podcast and all things animation, and possibly even more crazy stories, because you never know what the future holds. Thank you guys so much for listening, and until next week, see you later, dudes!